to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What'd I do?
Turn around. Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
The jury of your peers, having found you guilty, 10 years.
What?
Come on. Get that.
I was in jail, too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and thank you for tuning in to Crossroads. We're glad to come to you every Tuesday morning here on WPFW 89.3 FM, your station for jazz and justice. WPFW is heard around the world. In fact, we were just notified that you can catch WPFW now worldwide with the Radio Net app. We've been getting calls from out of the country globally, and I guess folks have been using the Radio Net app. So you can access WPFW and our show Crossroads on Radio Net app. And you can be able to tune in no matter where you are in the world. So thank you for that information, and thank you for folk who are tuning in and for all those folk who are sending in letters, emails, and et cetera. And to those men and women locked up and confined in these hot prison cells, I know y'all going through hell. So thank you for your words of encouragement and support. Now we get to what we call the grapevine, information that you can use. The grapevine. Derek Chauvin, the former Minneapolis police officer convicted in the killing of George Floyd, has returned to the prison where he was stabbed 22 times last month. The 47-year-old ex-cop's lawyer told the Minneapolis Star Tribune Chauvin's condition had improved to where he could be released from a Tucson, Arizona hospital, but they remained very concerned the federal penitentiary where he's incarcerated would be unable to keep him safe. The 52-year-old suspect reportedly told police he didn't intend to kill Chauvin, but had spent a month thinking about assaulting the victim before shivving him in the prison's law library. Prosecutors allege prison guards stopped Tusik from committing murder. Tusik told FBI investigators he symbolically chose Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, to attack Chauvin, whose encounter with Floyd sparked racially charged riots and protests in 2020. Chauvin, 47, was sentenced to 22 and a half years in prison for kneeing on the Black motorist's neck for nearly 10 minutes during an arrest caught on video. Ooh, and it's going to be difficult, if not virtually impossible, to keep that guy safe unless you keep him in total isolation. Senator Cory Booker, prisoners should be learning professional skills that help prepare them for their release instead of being forced to work, sometimes picking crops in triple-digit heat for pennies an hour or nothing at all, Senator Cory Booker said at a Senate Judiciary Subcommittee hearing on Tuesday. America locks up more people than almost any other country in the world, nearly 2 million, and they are disproportionately people of color, brown, and Black. Those who refuse to work can be punished, including being thrown into solitary confinement, Booker noted. And those injured or killed often do not have access to most basic rights and protections guaranteed to other American workers. Our prisons should reflect the best of who we are. They should reflect our values, the New Jersey Democrat said. And they should, in my strong opinion, be places that are not just for punishment, but for rehabilitation and for creating roads of redemption. While most incarcerated workers today help maintain correction facilities, others are leased out to private companies or take part in work release programs. Companies such as McDonald's, KFC, Walmart, Cargill, and Tyson's Foods have benefited from the multi-billion-dollar industry. The Associated Press found as part of an ongoing two-year investigation into how prison labor is quietly entering the supply chain of some of America's most recognized companies and brands. San Diego County Sheriff's settled jail death lawsuit for $15 million. Weeks before it was scheduled to go before a federal jury, San Diego County has agreed to an eye-popping end to a long-running lawsuit that stemmed from a chilling jail death nearly 5 years ago. The county and one of its private health care contractors will pay $15 million to the family of Eliza Sterner, a 24-year-old pregnant woman who died in Los Cosas jail after a sheriff's deputy and medical workers watched her collapse in her cell and left her to die. San Diego County taxpayers will bear the brunt of the monetary damages, absorbing $14 million of the agreed-upon amount. The Coast Correctional Medical Group, which provides medical professionals to treat people in jail, will pay $1 million. The cash payout is the largest ever approved by the Board of Supervisors in a wrongful death case. The plaintiff's lawyer said San Diego County now has paid more than $75 million over the past 5 years plus for deputy negligence and misconduct. And I'm glad to see that there's more and more cases of correction officers, wardens, chaplains being arrested, sent to prison, being charged with offenses, and now these suits are coming down. So hopefully this transparency would translate to other facilities. Extreme heat is killing people in prison. What's being done about it? As advocates fight to provide relief to incarcerated people, of large sections of the country, hundreds of thousands of prisoners are being forced to endure deadly temperatures inside heat-retaining steel or concrete facilities that offer little, if any, access to air conditioning or circulation. With these conditions likely to worsen due to climate change, advocates are fighting to provide relief to incarcerated people who are now among the earliest and most vulnerable victims of this crisis. Though the U.S. Constitution protects against cruel and unusual punishment, there's no federal mandate for prisoners or jails to provide air conditioning or keep indoor temperatures below a certain level. Air conditioning at this point is no longer a privilege. It's a right, said Lee Wang, a research analyst with the Prison Policy Initiative. Extreme heat and heat waves are killing people everywhere in prison. Despite its notorious hot summer, Texas is one of at least 44 states that do not offer universal air conditioning in its prisons. With more than 100,000 people in state facilities, Texas operates the nation's largest state prison system. A total of 70% of units in its prisons are entirely or partially uncooked. Since then, dozens of incarcerated people have died due to related or unknown causes in sweltering Texas prison. The Texas Department of Correction has not officially classified a prison death as heat-related since 2012. Even as research has shown that intense heat is associated with an increased risk of mortality behind bars, including due to heart disease and suicide. Woo! Jackson, Mississippi wants curfew centers to cut crime. Here's what other cities have learned. After a teen's murder, city officials hope a curfew in youth centers would get kids off the street. Young people are skeptical. Curfews have been imposed and abandoned numerous times in Jackson over the decades. The mayor, Lumumba, invoked the last temporary curfew in 2021 following a surge in violence during the COVID-19 pandemic. The planned youth centers, he said, would get to the root causes of why that young people may be on the street. Instead of detaining them and becoming part of the problem, Other cities have enacted curfews or set up youth centers with mixed results. National studies have shown that curfews usually do not stop crime. In Jackson, city officials believe the engagement centers will become a safe place to keep kids away from potentially dangerous situations. The children would have to agree to be taken to the centers or go home. Police cannot force kids on the streets to attend the curfew. Fighting youth crime is a political cry often used by elected officials, law enforcement, and city leaders across the nation. Hey, why is it that we always target our youth? No matter what happened, these rec centers or these relief centers are part of the answer. These kids need jobs, they need housing, they need wraparound services, and they need to be involved in the decision-making process. Too often, we make all the decisions for the kids, and you got kids who are able to enunciate, to participate, and to be in these meetings about decisions that affect their well-being in life. Include the kids in all these decisions when these laws is coming down. They're the ones who are the impact. Thank you, and that's been Grapevine information that you can use. Now, our topic this morning is returning citizens crisis in Washington, D.C., and it is a crisis, not only in Washington, but all across the country. Every month, or every year, rather, there's about 2,500 to 3,000 men and women are released all across this country back to Washington, D.C. And oftentimes, everybody that they know, or most of the folks they know, are dead, no longer in existence. They're in nursing homes, or they don't have the resources to be of assistance. So men and women are being released back from the federal system and state correctional systems to D.C. without no help. There's a housing is a crisis. We get calls every week of men who did 30, 40, some even 50 years with nowhere to go, no place to stay. There's no jobs. There's very little wraparound services. And D.C. has a myriad of organizations and programs that provide help, support, and assistance for the returnees. But there's still a crisis is developing and blooming, and we need to do something about it. And joining us is somebody who's very knowledgeable and informed on this topic. His name is Charles Thornton. He's the former director of MORCA, the Mayor's Office of Returning Citizens Affairs. And that's the office I started and was the first director in 1994, over 30 years ago. And I'm glad to see that office still in existence and thank all the people who helped us make that a reality. And Charles, thank you for joining us this morning, Mr. Charles Thornton. Good morning, Charles.
Good morning, sir. How you doing this morning?
And how you doing? I want to say, before we get into the topic, you and I were in New Orleans about a few weeks ago. And man, it was a pleasure seeing you in New Orleans for the black tie reception for Fox and Rob's movie, Zoom 2. And man, I didn't know you could dance like that, Charles. I saw you jumped up on the floor, man. I said, look at this turkey. Boy, you was getting down, weren't you?
Yes, sir, man. It's always good to have fun, man. You gotta get it every now and then. It's good seeing you too, bro.
Yeah, and man, you're one of the few directors of the MORCA who we've been able to get on a regular basis on the show, because we've been running into a lot of static now, Charles, since you left. Folk can't come on our show, can't talk about issues. And that office, this office that we started 30 years ago, and we had difficulty getting people on, but that ain't why we're here. We're here today to talk about the update and the status of what's going on with the returning citizen population, because we've been dealing with this for some time, you and I both, Charles, and it don't seem to be getting any better. What's your take on this crisis that's affecting the ex-offending returning citizens community in D.C.?
Well, as you mentioned, you know, this is we've been down this road, right? So this is not new territory for us. You know, one of the things I definitely want to do is, be able to clarify some issues and concerns and talk about some things that are happening right now and try to focus on, you know, what a solution look like, you know, how we can, you know, better prepare people on the way out, what, you know, kind of services are in place right now, what we can do to enhance the services that are in place, and how we as a community, man, as a community, can really come together, because we can't depend on government. We can't depend on the nonprofit sector. We can't depend on community base. We individuals, man, you know, you've always been a part of that, man. We taking care of ourselves. You know what I mean? Men and women formerly incarcerated coming together, man, to be able to stick that hand out and direct these guys that are coming home and show them how to turn this thing around, man. You know, you yourself, man, you know, having been pardoned by, you know, a president now on a radio show, doing all the work you're doing, you, if nobody else, man, is a prime example. You know, you had life, you know, so we know that it could be turned around. So now it's up to us, man, to kind of, you know, roll that map out and begin to show these guys. We got to do it ourselves.
You know, you're right, Charles. You hit it right on the head. We've been down this road before. And joining us also is our distinguished co-host, Nikeche Taifa. And that Nikeche is all over the country. Every time we turn around, she's gone someplace, and it's hard reaching her.
Oh, shoot. I'm just trying to tag along behind you, Roach Martin. Hey, Charles. How you doing? Hey,
good, great. Good to hear
you. You know, I mentioned that we were in New Orleans a few weeks ago for Fox and Rob's movie,
Time Two. Yeah.
The first movie was nominated for an Emmy, Time, Academy Award in January, and it didn't win, but it was an honorable mention. Mm-hmm. Last week, they won the Essence Film Festival Award as another honorable mention, Time 2. And when I looked up, and we in New Orleans and saw Charles, and they awarded seven couples, husband and wife mm-hmm. couples, who've been working in the trenches and on the boots on the ground with the returning citizens from all over the country. And it was a joy and a pleasure to meet so many people from around the country who were doing the work that we were doing, trying to help returnees.
Yeah, and Roach, you and Martine were one of those seven honored couples, right?
Absolutely.
Yes,
yeah, I just want to make sure the PFW audience knows that.
And they gave us a nice award, but what blew my mind, I've never been to a New Orleans party. We were getting ready to leave at 11:30, and Charles, you were sitting on the side, and man, and they said, can nobody leave? And they opened up the door, and the New Orleans brass band came in.
That's right.
And the folk jumped up on the tables and on the bars. I never seen people party and dance like everybody had on gowns, and it was a white tennis shoe ball. You can have a gown on and a suit, but everybody had on tennis shoes. And I've never in my life enjoyed a party or the response and how we were received. And that Fox and Rob is one powerful couple. And I looked up, and to my left, my wife said, look, there's Charles. He on the dance floor. I said, what are you doing with it? What, he fell out? I said, what, he fell out? She said, no, he's dancing.
Yeah, that's part of my
roots. Roach and Charles, we got to talk to Fox and Rob and bring Time Two here to D.C. because it hasn't premiered or shown here in D.C. We got to make that happen.
Yeah, and it won best documentary at Essence Festival this year.
Folk, we don't recommend films or books you to read, but you need to see Time 1 and Time 2. Time 2 will make you cry. I've been dealing with prison over 50 years, and it brought tears to my eyes. How this lady was able to document her pain, her suffering, and disappointment with her family going through for 21 years. And she documented and filmed it using her own home video camera and compiled all that information with a director and made a major second movie. And this movie is off the chain. And when I saw our buddy Charles down there, it made me feel good to know that we got folk in Washington, D.C. who is involved in things all over the country. And every time I'm like, you couldn't have Keisha, every time we call Charles, he's in South America. He's here. He's there. I said, man, do the warden know you went to them in the places without his permission, Charles? Huh? Charles.
Absolutely, man. You know, again, man, it is such a blessing. And you know, we got to let folks know that, you know, it's available for anybody that want it, man. And I believe that, you know, you have to, you know, have to do something with your life, man. That's just
and you're doing it, man. I mean, as a former director of Marker, you took this thing to another whole level, Charles. And I take my hat off to you. I respect you and I'm proud of you, man. But more than that, when Angela James had Free Her on the rally on a couple of months ago down on the Freedom Plaza in Washington, D.C. You were a big participant and involved in that. And every time I turn around, I see Charles on the sideline, Charles on the front line.
But see, Charles was there 10 years ago. It was because of Charles Thornton that the first Free Her rally 10 years ago was able to happen down there on the mall. You know,
how did that happen? I didn't know about that. How did that happen?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, that was 10 years
what
ago.
What happened? What happened, Charles?
So the story is Andrea had just come home, right? And she came down here for another rally that was being done by Dr. Daniels' group. And that's when she made the decision that she wanted to come back, you know. And I have to be real, you know, I played a small part and helped connecting the dots, but this thing was really put on by God. That first rally, yes, man, we had about 2,500 people down there, and it was at the Sylvain Theater down at the monument, you know, Washington Monument. And the Park Service, man, they kind of rolled the carpet out. But the biggest thing is that it was individuals from the district, you know, Yango Sawyer, you know, it was folks from the district that helped put this on. You know, we were the crowd. She had folks came from out of town, but it wasn't nothing like the one we just put on. Folks, yes, came from all over the world.
All over the country. Yeah. All over the
world. You know what, yeah, I mean? There's people here from all over. Yeah. And it's a beautiful event, man. And again, yeah, you know, to see formerly incarcerated people come together like that for a common cause, man, that's the key. That's it.
And it was no violence. Nobody got assaulted, hurt, or robbed. And you brought in, they brought in thousands of people from around the world, returnees. And most of the folks had been inside or you got loved ones inside. And they are fighting to see this, mm-hmm, kind of concern and commitment worldwide. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel good to know that things are changing and we got people who are really involved in this to make things get better for those folks who are less fortunate.
But the biggest point for the National Council of Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls, but they put out a, lack of better words, a mandate to the Biden administration to free 100 women, you know, to pardon 100 women, 100 of the women who have been incarcerated for the longest amount of time,
yes,
with no threat to society. I'm talking about women who were 60, 70, 80 years old.
Oh, yes.
You know, let's pardon them and let them back out. They're no longer a threat. You know, and that was the you know, the thrust of what the actual march was all about. It started, you know, when Biden first came in office to try to get, you know, attention to these women and help, you know, get some of these women pardoned. You know, Obama, yeah, pardoned a whole lot of people.
Yeah,
I wish I could say the same about President Biden.
Yes, I know what you mean. You know, Charles is also with the Correctional Information Council. You want to explain to our listeners what the Correctional Information Council is, Charles?
Absolutely. So the Corrections Information Council is an agency that was legislatively mandated as a direct result of the 1997 Revitalization Act. You know, and for folks who don't know, it was the vehicle that the Revitalization Act that basically allowed the city, you know, to wash its hands with Lawton, you know, close Lawton Reformatory, and it allowed D.C. residents to be able to go all over the federal system to spend their time. Now, that in itself is an issue because these are men and women who have been convicted of state crimes, but they're serving their time in the federal system. So part of the process to, you know, monitor conditions, make sure that programs were in place, you know, that's where the Corrections Information Council was set up to do. So it's the monitoring body of DC residents who are serving time in federal prison. It allows them to go in and interview individuals, do inspections, look at the infrastructure where the individuals are being held, look at some of the paperwork, some of the guidelines, you know, and, you know, it's an agency that was stood up actually in around 2000, 2001, when we finally, you know, released folks from Lawton and got them out into the federal system. At that time, there was about 9,000, close to 10,000 men and women who had transitioned from the city into the federal system, about 10,000, a little less than 10,000 people. So when we first, you know, stood up the Corrections Information Council, it took years to be able to work out with the Federal Bureau of Prisons a process that will allow the Corrections Information Council to do its legislatively mandated work. And this was federal legislation. So this wasn't something that the city was asking the BOP to do. This was something that was federally mandated. It was legislation that they had to do. But it took a long time for the first, few years. We were only able to, set up an office over at the D.C. jail. You might remember Chester Hart and Ron Hampton. They were a part of the council at that time. But, there was no, opportunities to go into the federal system. Well, that's changed. As a result of, a lot of advocacy, a lot of work you put in, the Keechee, a lot of other people, we were able to work out some guidelines and put an MOU together, which allowed the CIC to begin to do inspections in the federal system. But that is the main goal, is to, to monitor the conditions of confinement of D.C. residents, no matter where they are located. And it even includes the central cell block. It includes the D.C. jail. But most important, all of the federal systems with the D.C. minimum.
Let me ask you this question. Since the Correction Information Council role is to inspect, monitor, and report on the conditions of confinement in the Bureau of Prisons for D.C. prisoners, the question pops up, do family members or can family members contact the CIC if they got a problem? Because we know there's a lot of issues where men and women don't get visits, and folk travel and fly thousands of miles. They go to one of them prisons, and they're being rejected because of their clothes or the way they're being treated. Our people are supposed to be being held within 500 or 300 miles of D.C., and that still has not been made a reality. Can families contact CIC and register a complaint or let you know of what's going on or what negative treatment they encountered in trying to go to visit a loved one?
Absolutely. And we get that, constantly. Individuals, folks go from, the district down to Florida to see a loved one, find out when they get there that the institution is on lockdown and they're not able to go in. They done got a hotel, spent all that money, to go see a loved one, and they can't even visit them. So, you can certainly, contact the Corrections Information Council. But I'd be remiss if I didn't say that, from a solution perspective, we're not positioned where we can call down and say, let this person in. Right now, it's set up that, a lot of the, what we can do and what we do is we report on these issues. We report on them. But we're going to need the community. We're going to need individuals to step up. We need the advocacy to step up so that we could begin to figure out a way to have these issues addressed. One of the things that is taking place, because there's a lot wrong with the Federal Bureau of Prisons. I don't have to tell you that. And for a long time, they have been able to kind of float under the radar, and things have happened, that are beginning to come out. So as a result of that, there's been legislation that has been introduced federally, right? So you had the Federal Prison Reform Act that it may, Nikita, you may know better than me, it should have been signed already, or it may be in the process of being signed by President Biden. And what that will do, and you can pull up information and Google that, but the Federal Prison Reform Act is going to allow a little more inspections from the, and it's kind of catch-22, because the Federal Bureau of Prisons is a federal agency. And the Federal Prison Reform Act will allow it to be inspected, but it's like the feds inspecting the feds. So, that's an issue, but at the same time, they also are creating what's called an ombudsman office. And the ombudsman office is what you were referring to earlier, where families can go to and report, you know, what's going on, report what's happening.
We don't have that now. We don't have an ombudsman now that families can call and report their complaints against the Federal Bureau of Prisons.
No, we do not. You know,
what do families do now, Charles? If somebody got a complaint and they, like you said, they go down to Texas or Florida and they fly down there and they tell them the prisoners on lockdown and they just spent all this money and they got to stay down there, it's a waste of time. Who do they report to?
They contact CIC, and Charles Thornton is the chair of the board of the Corrections Information Council, an independent agency. See, that's what it's needed. Ombudsman is critically important. The other oversight, the federal monitoring, is important, but there needs to be an outside independent agency as well. And there need to be CICs throughout the system, not just CIC, Corrections Information Council, is just for DC residents that are splattered throughout the federal system, but there just needs to be one comprehensive that deals with the whole system as well.
And the other entity, you know, Mr. Brown, I would, you know, encourage people to do is to our Congresswoman, you know, our Congresswoman Norton, you know, she's our federal, you know, person, you know. So when we come up with issues, especially affecting around the Federal Bureau of Prisons, you know, Norton's office has to be contacted. And she's been a, you know, she's been a huge advocate. She just recently, within the last 3 weeks, sent off a letter to Director Peters, Colleen Peters, the director of Federal Bureau of Prisons, in reference to, you know, a report that we did, the CIC, at McCleary, right? And part of that report, you know, some of the guys we had talked to, you know, had, you know, most of them had talked about retaliation from prison officials there, you know, and assaults from prison officials. So what the CIC did was, you know, we you know, went in to the Office of OIG, the federal OIG, and reported, you know, what was, you know, reported to us. And it really went nowhere. So we just recently, and we can get that letter that Norton sent up to, you know, to Director Peters, you know, inquiring about that, because it actually went nowhere. And we had to bring Norton in because this is real. You know, when we go in and we do inspections, we sit down and we sit right across confidentially with the doors shut with residents who are willing to talk to us, and they lay out what's going on. And it's just, you know, it's, you know, we have to find a real way to hold the individuals accountable. When I say individuals, I'm really talking about the Federal Bureau of Prisons accountable for, you know, what it is that is being reported. You know, at this stage, you know, we're at a place where, you know, we do give recommendations and suggestions to the Federal Bureau of Prisons after we do our inspections. But, you know, it's 122 BOP prisons. D.C. residents in over 50 of them. So if we do an inspection.
You said we're in over 50?
Over 50. Well over 50 D.C. residents. Well over 50 of them, right? And when we do an inspection, say, at a Hazelden, you know, which a recent report revealed that Hazelden is one of the most violent institutions, you know, in the BOP.
You're talking about Hazelden in West Virginia?
Hazelden in West Virginia. We have a number of D.C. residents there, you know, close to, I think, 200, you know. And the thing with Hazelden is that this was a federal report that revealed Hazelden being one of the most highly, you know, violent prisons in the BOP.
Yes,
you know,
yeah.
We noted that, you know, when we did an inspection years ago, you know. But again, when we do recommendations, you know, there's no real way to hold the BOP accountable to the recommendations that we give, and that's what has to be worked on.
Definitely. This is WPFW, your station for jazz and justice. We're listening to Charles Thornton, former director of MORCA, Mayor's Office of Returning Citizens Affairs, and currently working with CIC, Correctional Information Council, and important information for your family so you can stay followed up. You can also listen to WPFW 89.3 FM Jazz Radio on the radio.net app, WPFW.
And for folks who wish to call in and join this discussion, the phone number is
202-588-0893.
Thank you. Charles, question. Since CIC has been going in monitoring and inspecting how men and women from the D.C. Department of Corrections are treated in the federal system, what are some of your highlights? What are some of the things that the CIC have been inspected, brought to the attention of the people in authority, and made a correction or made an improvement? Has there been anything that you can blow up the show that CIC did as a result of their inspections and the tuning facilities?
Sure. So, I mean, you are tuning out a little bit, but I think I got the gist of your question.
Okay, let me sit a little closer.
Now, I got your question, though, and okay. I'm going to go back, right? I would say, first, up until 2012, right, there was no one was going in. So we started really going in CIC around 2013, 2014, right?
How were you received?
Oh, shocking. It was shocking to most of the wardens, you know, because this was something that was being done. Director Samuels was in place at the time, and he had, kind of facilitated our ability to go into these institutions. And part of it was why I was at Marker as well. You may recall, even when, the Office of Returning Citizen began, going out to the different federal prisons with D.C. residents, that had never been done. Ichi said something very important, in most of the jurisdictions, because the federal system is made up of men and women from all over the country. Most of these other states and localities and counties, they don't have an Office of Returning Citizens. They don't have a Corrections Information Council. So literally no one is going in seeing, the conditions, talking to the individuals, a few times you even went down with us. So we were able to go in. So that was shocking. It was shocking because, a lot of the times, we intentionally brought formerly incarcerated people in, and that was, shocking to the, the guards, to the staff, but it was necessary, and out of that, we were able to, set up things like over at Hazel in the secure female facility, and there's been a lot of turnover in directors in the BOP, but during Director Samuels' time and Tom Kane's time, we were able to set up what we call, lunch with mommies, where we were able to bring in kids of women from D.C. that were at Hazelden's secure female facility, bring them down to have lunch with their mothers. That was significant.
There's
been so many changeover in directors with the BOP. A lot of the systems that have been put in place are no longer going on, and then we had COVID, et cetera, et cetera. But these were things that I think had begun to have impact. If Family Day in the BOP was started as a result of D.C. residents, Marker going in, making suggestions, and they began what they call Family Day throughout the whole BOP. And
is that going on now? That's still happening all around the country?
I'm not really sure, so I don't like to say, and that's something we can check on, because these, again, were things that, we were able to, help get set up that I believe had an impact on the overall morale of the individuals in these institutions. And when the morale of the residents is good, it makes it safer for everyone.
There you go.
You know, one thing you might, you know, can appreciate this. I know you've been in Central Cell Block many a time, and so have I.
Who are you telling?
and one of the things that we were able to do as a city, and I'm so proud of this, it went under the radar. You know yourself, when you go to Central Cell Block, especially if you go down there on a Friday and a Monday is a holiday, you sleeping on steel.
Yeah, for three, four days.
Three, four days. No, I don't blanket, care who you no is, no blanket, nothing. No pillow, no nothing. Well, guess what? That's inhumane to some folks, especially pregnant women. Women who are pregnant, they can't sleep like that. So we one of the recommendations that we made to the director of the DOC was that any woman should have a mattress when they come in the Central Cell Block. There's no reason not to, especially pregnant women. And that was done. And that's floated on the radar. Now, if you go to Central Cell Block, and you're a woman or you're pregnant or you you get a mattress, and that makes a big difference. And believe it or not, I would probably could safely say that that doesn't happen anywhere else in the country. Most other places, I don't know why, but when you go in the jails, you sleep on steel. So little things like that, but we need systemic things, bigger things. One of the things I am again proud of that was part of a CIC was recently the passing of the First Step Act did not include DC residents because technically, this was a federal act.
Federal law, yes.
Right? And, the DC residents was there, based on, they're not federal residents, but working, with our council, Congresswoman Norton and the BOP, they were able to, allow DC residents, to also benefit from the First Step Act.
Yeah.
So there's things, man, but they far and in between. It's a lot more that's needed, but again, it's going to take, everyone's participation, man, getting involved, understanding what's going on and coming up with, not the recommendations. The recommendations ain't the issue. It's the accountability.
Let me throw this out, Charles. To me, the number one issue is housing and employment for people coming out of prison. And we got guys that, you and I even talked to them, some of the same people. Guy did 50 years, come out, ain't got no place to go, nowhere to stay. And now we got all these folks. We got over 2,000 or 3,000 people released every year, like 10 or 20 a month. And there's nowhere to go. We don't have a halfway house in D.C. no more. So and men and women are being kept in prison longer because they can get out 4 or 5 months early. They're going to a halfway house. We don't have a halfway house. Our folks are being sent to Richmond and to Baltimore. What's the status from CIC's point of view? What can be done or what's happening on the halfway house situation in Washington, D.C.? Because we got men and women in prison that can't be released because there's no halfway house for them to go to.
Right. I mean, and I would say is that, the 62 or so beds that are offered at the Volunteers of America in Baltimore is just not sufficient. It's really not sufficient whatsoever. And, it's been made clear from the BOP that, that is pretty much alone. Those bids were not intended for DC residents, but they're using them for DC residents, and it's really not sufficient. There was a solicitation that went out for, as you're aware, a 300 bed facility. It was my understanding it was Core DC,
yes.
That's absolutely who won that award. And they are in the process of building that facility. I have no idea when you know, when it'll be up. I have seen, you know, the beginning of the hole.
Yeah, you know, breaking the ground. We saw that last week, breaking the ground.
Right, you know, so there has been a ground breaking, but, you know, this, if I'm not mistaken, this this award was won years ago. You know, this wasn't a recent award. Yes. This award was won, you know, at least 3 to 5 years ago.
And, that's right.
Right now, we're not even out of the dirt, you know, with no kind of a facility. So, you know, and I don't see it getting better, you know. You know, so I think we probably have to talk more with the BOP and Core DC to really find out.
And Eleanor Holmes Norton, command.
Ms. Norton, and Ms. Norton, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we need to know, you know, when that facility will be up and running and what we can do to help get it up and running.
We need to move on this fast because you got folks, man, who there's a new word going around, Charles, called prison side. There's suicide, homicide, and genocide, fratricide, but there's a new word called prison side. Men and women are returning back to prison because they can't make it. They can't adjust to all the changes. And secondly, there's no housing. When the Supreme Court ruled last week that they can lock up people sleeping on the street, and quite a few of these guys are homeless, come out of institution. Now you come out after 30 years, you ain't got nowhere to go. You sleep on the park bench, you go back to prison for sleeping on the street. So where did the homeless go? And our population is such that men are going back to, like that movie Shawshank Redemption, when the librarian book came out and said he couldn't make it out here. This is a reality, and our folk don't have nowhere to go, no place to live. And not on top of that, even if they find a place to live, they can't get a job because of the criminal record or the collateral consequences. So when we say this is a crisis, it's just a layer upon layer of frustration, disappointment, and hopelessness. So we need a halfway house, and we need folk who can provide this or provide us assistance or whatever. Everybody is entitled to have a house or a place to lay your head safely. I don't care whether you broke the law or didn't break the law. This is a basic human right that we're being denied all across this city. So, and secondly, at the beginning of this show, Charles, you heard 3-4 little girls talking at the beginning. This is WPFW. These are some of Mertine's nieces and nephews that we had. And one of the girls was 11 years old, and she said all she wanted was to see her father. He's in Beaumont, Texas. She haven't seen him in 11 years. And when she went to see him, she wanted to sit in her father's lap and rub his beard. They told her, you only got 2 minutes for hello and 2 minutes for goodbye. Mm. You know what I mean? And the rest of the 2, 3, 4 hours, she had to sit there and look across from her father and couldn't touch him. Can't touch your mother. You can't sit on their lap and hug him. In Lawton, we had certain rights. Like you said, a family day. A family day came about as a result of a riot in Lawton back in the 60s. So all the inmates that were transferred from the Department of Correction supposedly enjoyed the same benefits that they had supposedly when they were in Lawton. Family Day is a major event, and it keeps families together. It keeps the institution safe. It makes the guards safe, because if you are not breaking the rules, you can participate. And that keeps an environment where everybody can try to do something positive and constructive. What's being done? Go ahead, Nikichi.
Yeah, no, let me just say something else, since I know we're getting up. I just want to say something else about Charles Thornton and just how helpful he is and has been. Charles, you know, I've been working with the Kennedy Center with their upcoming opera called Fidelio, which is about a prison, right? And Charles was very helpful in connecting with DC jail, Central, I don't know all the terms for jail, but they're going to be coming in there to do some arts type stuff with the brothers that are there, and just the hookups that he makes is just a phenomenal. And Roach, I don't know if you remember, several years ago we had worked with the Kennedy Center with Blue, that opera about killing of a young Black man. So they have another one coming up in October dealing with prisons, and we're going to be doing some community engagement around that. Charles and Roach, I hope both of you all will be part of that. But again,
we'd love to just plug us in. We love to
those prison doors. Yeah,
yeah,
just and plug us in, Nikichi. We'd love to.
Absolutely.
Yeah, piggyback on what Nikichi is talking about, you know, in our local jail, you'd be amazed, man, some of the things that's going on. On the 27th of July, they're having Family Day.
Over the jail?
Mimicking what we did in Lawton. right? Family Day. You know.
So what does that mean?
It's exactly what we did at Lawton. You know, all of the residents will be, you know, on the field at the jail. You can. I'm actually one of the speakers there. Their family will be in where they can walk, talk, eat popcorn.
When is that, Charles?
It's the 27th.
Send me information on that. We like to be send us information on that.
And I'll talk to the staff there to see if, you know, see if we can work around, you know, maybe even having you as one of the speakers. I'm a, you know, because they got a couple of speakers that are going to be present that day. But again, it's to, you know, to promote family reunification.
We like to promote that, Charles. Plug us in right there. We like to do a show on that.
Yeah, I can say it's the 27th, and this will be the second one this year. So you know how we used to do in Lawton, we would have two or three. So this is the second one, I believe, for the DOC this year. So I'm going to definitely connect you with that, man, so we can, you know, keep going. And the other thing, you know, locally, you know, I would be remiss to be on a show like this and not mention the fact that, you know, they're in the process now of, you know, building, I'm going to call it a new jail.
Yeah.
In the district, you know. And, you know, I'm a native Washingtonian. I've been here all my life. I'm 63 years old.
You're older than me, man.
Yes, sir. You know, so you know, I'm familiar with the jail that's set over top of the metro.
Yeah,
you know, when CB3 was the juvenile block at that jail, before the so-called new jail that we in now was even built. You know, and you know, but I bring it up because the community has to have an impact on what that looks like. You know, when those decisions are made, as you mentioned earlier, you know, if it does not, you know, and there's, I know Director Faust, he's been, you know, making rounds, going and speaking about it. He was at the Ready Center maybe 2 weeks ago, you know, laying out the plans for the new jail. They're calling it something else, but basically that's what it is, a jail. And, you know, but the community has to come together and participate. The community has to say, this is what we want this jail to look like. You know, this is what we need in this jail for to be, you know, a secure environment where people can actually educate themselves, prepare themselves for, because everybody that go into the jail does not go to the feds. Some of those folks come home. You know, we need to make sure that they prepared to come back to the street and make sure that it's not used, you know, for individuals like our insane asylum. You know, folks going there who should be maybe in the hospital. Okay. You know, it's a whole lot of comments that the public need to be involved with.
Our time is running out. We got a couple of minutes. Charles, you want to give out some information on how they can reach you and how they can reach Correction Information Council if folk have a complaint or an issue that they need to be addressed, how they can reach you and the Correction Information Council?
Okay. So I can be reached. Actually, I don't have a problem giving them my number. When this is actually my cell number, I don't have a problem giving it out. Feel free to call me, Charles Thornton, 202-246-3823. And I can kind of direct calls that if someone calls, if there's something I can do, help individual, I will. The Corrections Information Council, the best way is to probably the CIC.gov, Corrections Information Council. .dc.gov. And you can Google also Corrections Information Council and get the information, how to get in touch with us. My number was 202-246-3823.
Okay. And we've been talking to Charles Thornton, CIC, Correction Information Council board member, former director of MORCA, Mayor's Office on Returning Citizens. And Charles has been a good friend, and we've been working together for the past two, three decades, along with Nikichi on these kind of issues. So thank you, Charles, for sharing that information that desperately needed. And I want to thank everybody who's listening and tuning in to Crossroads. And remember, You can listen to Crossroads around the world. Just go to radio.net app and you can punch in WPFW. I want to thank everybody for tuning in. We'll come to you again next Tuesday. And remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas.
Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry. Be happy.
WPFW presents Democracy Now!'s coverage of the Republican National Convention, Monday, July 15th through Friday, July 19th at 11 a.m. It is your support that makes this possible. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
The Institute for Policy Studies, the Wallace Global Fund, and The Nation invite you to their first annual Henry A. Wallace Symposium, Countering American Fascism, Lessons from Organizing in the U.S. Heartland, on Monday, July 22nd from 6:30 to 8 p.m. Speakers include National Affairs Correspondent for The Nation, John Nichols, Salma Arias of People's Action, and IPS Executive Director Tope Falerin. That's Countering American Fascism, Lessons from Organizing in the U.S. Heartland, Monday, July 22nd, 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the 14th and V Streets Busboys and Poets. More information and how to RSVP can be found online, ips-dc.org/events/countering-american-fascism. WPFW, your station for jazz and justice, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, this is Miyuki. Thanks to all who contributed to or are thinking about contributing to WPFW's Relocation Fund. Your very generous donations are what make WPFW possible. Your continued support keeps us alive. Special thanks to Joyce and James Kilgore, who made it possible for our 125 Ellington Thank You gift to be available. Detailed information at WPFWFM.org. Thanks to Gloria Turner for feeding our phone volunteers. Thanks to all who work together to help WPFW build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hey, Chris Garlock here.
And I'm Elise Bryant.
Tune in Thursdays at 1 p.m.
for the Labor Heritage Hour Hour.
Every week, we explore labor arts and culture.
As anarchist Emma Goldman said so famously, if I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution.
And that's how we feel about labor music, films,
theater, poetry,
labor history, labor art,
spoken word, basically anything that brings labor and the arts together.
So, join us for the Labor Heritage Power Hour
here on WPFW 89.3 FM.
Your station for jazz and justice.
That's the Labor Heritage Power Hour.
Thursdays from 1 to 2 p.m.
The heart and soul
of the American labor movement.
African Diaspora International Film Festival and Africa World Now Project host the 17th Annual African Diaspora International Film Festival, D.C., August 2nd to the 4th at the George Washington University Student Center, featuring fiction and documentary films, receptions, and Q&As. ADIFF D.C. from August 2nd to the 4th at the George Washington University Student Center. Tickets and schedule at nyadiff.org or 212-864-1760. ADIFF, where Black Life Matters. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hello, WPFW. Summertime is here. Words, Beats, and Life and Arts for Everybody have the event for your family and friends this season. DMV Made Festival is happening Saturday, July 27th on the National Mall, a one-day celebration of the D.C., Maryland, Virginia region, promoting the intersections of arts and culture, plus health and wellness. Featuring musical acts, Chuck Brown Band, Sweet Honey and the Rock, Substantial, Belladonna, DuPont Brass, and just added, The Blackbirds, celebrating 50 years of their classic, Rock Creek Park, plus four more music and dance stages, Family Fun Zone, Poetry and Storytelling Pavilion, live art installations, hands-on workshop tent, and health and wellness pavilion.
free to the entire community. July 27th on the National Mall, DMV Made Festival. Get more information and RSVP today. WBLINC.org/DMVMade.